If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Biden administration suspends drilling leases in the Alaskan Arctic as the Keystone XL pipeline is declared dead. Plus, Kamala Harris's comments on the border come under heavy criticism, but maybe a little bit unfairly. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WCJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. Earlier this month, the Interior Department announced that it was suspending oil and gas leases in the the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR, pending what it called a comprehensive environmental analysis to review the potential impacts of the program and to address legal deficiencies. So, Kim, can you remind us exactly what is ANWR and what do you think the Biden administration is accomplishing here?
Well, ANWR, as you say, is a piece of land that was specifically set aside by Congress for future oil and gas production, or at least a portion of it. But for decades, there was a fight over actually getting those leases going. Various Democratic presidents and Congresses managed to block access to this very small portion of it that is up on the shore. And so finally, though, in the 2017 Trump tax reform, Republicans managed to get the votes to get it to go ahead. The Trump administration then went forward with getting the leases underway and actually got those leases out last year, I believe. And now you have a new president that's come in and completely suspended them. And it brings up not just enormous questions of economic security and also competitiveness internationally. But I think there's some real legality questions about whether or not that's something they can even do.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. To add a little bit more context here, so ANWR itself is about 19 million acres, and there are about 1.5 million acres of it that have been opened to oil and gas exploration. There was a lease sale, I think, in January, and it didn't attract a whole lot of interest, especially not the big players. And so some speculation might be that it's, it costs more to drill up in the Arctic, but also there's a PR problem and the issue that you're doing these leases basically in the middle of a presidential transition and the incoming administration is not going to be looking favorably toward them. But it's interesting, Bill. So I went to the Oil and Gas Journal, nothing like the trade press to get the skinny on what's going on. And they're saying that given the amount of time required to do a new environmental study, this could be a delay of 2 years. But the Democratic chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee is saying this: I'm confident that after a thorough review is complete, the Biden administration will come to the only possible conclusion that the leases should be voided, unquote. So, Bill, it seems like that Kim is right, that what we're going to end up having is a debate on whether it's legal for the Biden administration to come in and cancel these leases after they're all signed and all the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Right. And it also means it just makes the possibility of renewing this, more and more costly and less likely. Look, what you were saying, there are certainly costs and unique costs to doing this, but the real costs were political and the uncertainty, and that affected with everything underwriting. No one wanted to back this thing, and it wasn't because there wasn't oil and there wasn't a need. It was all these other things, and it's really it has so many ramifications because Joe Biden's always talking about good union jobs, the economy of good union jobs in the private sector. Well, they had good union jobs with this, and he took them away. He's alienated Canada, a close ally and so forth. And it just seems the triumph of climate theology that fossil fuels are evil and must be destroyed no matter what, and that there's no downside, there's no cost. There's so many knock-on costs for people that use it, refinery. There's just so many knock-on costs, and the Biden administration just seems to ignore them all.
And one of those costs, I think, is geopolitical. I mean, it seems like this, Kim, is an opening for Russia, which is moving ahead on oil and gas exploration in its Arctic territories, and then sending that gas to American allies over in Europe.
Yeah, this is an enormous self-inflicted wound. I mean, let's just go back and look at the past couple of decades. For years, for much of sort of America's modern history, it was dependent on players like Russia and OPEC, Venezuela, basically some bad guys in the world, for its oil needs. And then starting about 20 years ago, we had a shale fracking revolution in this country, turning places like Texas and North Dakota, and even other a few other states, Pennsylvania, for instance, into, you know, fracking powerhouses, not just creating a lot of great jobs here in the United States, but massively upping our crude production. If you look at the numbers, by 2019, we were producing 2.5 times more crude oil here than we were in 2008. We were becoming a leader in exporting liquid natural gas. And it meant that we no longer had to just bow to the demands, the separate political demands of a lot of these players for fear that they would shut production or crimp production and raise prices and make things tough here in the United States. So it's given us enormous freedom in our geopolitical dealings. And we're just unilaterally backing away from that, especially because, as you mentioned, no one else is doing it. Just recently, Rosneft, major Russian producer, announced a $170 billion project in their own northern part of the country. They are saying that that will become the largest LNG gas producer by 2030. Russia's laying pipelines right now to Europe and to Asia. It's almost done with its Nord Stream 2 pipeline to Germany. And so all it's doing, we are basically giving up one of our major strategic economic advantages and handing it over to people that right now we're battling with on other issues.
Meanwhile, last week, the Keystone XL pipeline was officially put out of its misery, is probably the right way to say it. This was a project that was proposed in 2008, and it was going to take oil from Canada, essentially to Nebraska, to connect up with an existing pipeline and then take it to the Gulf Coast refineries. And here's what the developer, TC Energy, said. Construction activities to advance the project were suspended following the revocation of its presidential permit on January 20th, 2021. After a comprehensive review of its options and in consultation with its partners, the government of Alberta, it has terminated the Keystone XL pipeline project, unquote. And it's true, Bill, that this, you could have seen this coming from a long way away, that the date that it cites there, January 20th, of course, that's inauguration day. But what do you make of this news?
Yeah, it's similar to Anwar. It's, you know, it's attacking a source that provided, you know, important fuel. It creates a rift with Canada that's unnecessary. And it's also going to do nothing about the carbon footprint, because it's not actually reducing fossil fuel demand, which is going to grow in the developed world. It's just saying we're not going to supply it. So again, I think this is a triumph of climate theology over reality for this. And as you know, they did this at the same time that they took away the sanctions for the pipeline the Russians are building overseas. So it doesn't hang together. All it does is sort of take this virtue signaling view that the United States will not dirty its hands with fossil fuels, but we don't care what the world does.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I think the thing that gets me about the Keystone news is just the capriciousness of the whole thing. I mean, the project was proposed in 2008. There was a long period of studying it and political debate about it, arguing about it. President Obama then denied the key permit in 2015, which seemed to shut the door on it. Then President Trump granted the permit in 2017. And then Biden canceled it again in 2021. And meanwhile, Kim, who knows how many millions of dollars have been spent on this rigmarole, and who in their right mind would, after this, would try to build anything like that kind of infrastructure?
Yeah, it's a terrible signal. And Canada is rightly furious. The Albertan provincial government is furious. You know, no one cares about companies, apparently, but I have no doubt TC Energy Corp is pretty furious. This was something, it was interesting. I remember meeting with the Trump Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke, back when he was first confirmed by the Senate. And this was a major priority of his. He talked about how feckless government had become in its dealings with the corporate world. We have a lot of interaction with companies, in particular in the energy sector. And, you know, billions of dollars of capital were getting wasted by governments that were not following the letter of the law, or using things like environmental assessments to stretch out projects or to end permits or to put them in limbo. And he was making a priority of offering basically stability, saying, look, if we're going to be a good negotiator, we're going to be a good partner. And if you come and you sign something with us, we're going to do what we can to make sure that that project works. You know, go through the right environmental assessments, but make sure this happens. And that was really a hallmark of the Trump administration. You now are seeing that thrown back into disarray with a Biden administration that is willy-nilly canceling things and putting things on halt. And as you said, the big problem is it's really a discouragement to any American or even foreign companies to try to build the sort of infrastructure that we so clearly need here. I mean, look, right now, Washington is having a debate about new infrastructure. Pipelines are a major part of that. We just saw what happened with Colonial Pipeline when that got shut down. It caused mass disruptions in the country. We need more redundancy, and we need more of these pipelines and ways to make sure that the oil keeps flowing. And we're doing the opposite at the moment.
And people who are opposed to these pipelines are clearly taking the Keystone situation as a model for what they want to do for other projects. So there's one called Line 3, which is a pipeline expansion in Minnesota. There's another project called Line 5 in Michigan, and their governor, Gretchen Whitmer, is trying to get the whole thing decommissioned. But Bill, just to the point about the fact that these are projects that are used. So the Line 5 project goes into Canada, and the government of Canada is saying, hang on, that's where we get fuel for Ontario. That's where Toronto Airport gets, you know, the source of its fuel for its jet fuel. And so it's, you know, what are they supposed to do in the absence of that?
Yeah, well, that is the entire problem with the Biden administration, that it thinks it can just shut these things down, close them off, and that there are no real life consequences for a lot of different people, a lot of knock-on effects. I don't know what it is with governors of Michigan. You know, if you remember Jennifer Granholm, now in charge of energy, when she was in Michigan, it was a disaster with her policies, you know, for solar energy and so forth. And now we have a new governor that seems oblivious to what they're doing. I think she's being sued by Canada. I'm not sure. There's a treaty, and there's an obligation in the treaty that we don't do anything to disrupt these kind of arrangements. So I don't know how that's going to turn out. But again, it just adds uncertainty to energy supplies. And you would think that after the disruptions we saw with the Colonial Pipeline, probably most people in America had never heard of the Colonial Pipeline, but it's something like 45% of the energy in the Northeast that goes through it. And it caused huge, huge problems. We could have a lot more of those coming on, but the Biden administration seems oblivious to this. And the green energy advocates are just all for canceling without saying what you're going to put in its place to satisfy the energy demand.
And that goes for these big projects, but it's also happening with smaller projects too. So something to keep an eye on is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which oversees natural gas pipelines. And it was interesting, at its last meeting in May, there were a couple of projects that were up for review, and not huge projects, you know, like natural gas pipelines, companies wanting to put in a new compressor station, things like that. And everyone agreed that these were worthy projects, that they were needed projects, that the demand was there. And yet they were almost derailed by a fight over climate change. There were a couple of Democratic commissioners who said that the environmental impact statements didn't do enough of an analysis on the carbon emission impacts of these projects. There was one Republican commissioner who said, hang on, our rule does not allow us to take that into account, and we can't just change that willy-nilly project by project. And so there was a bit of a spat at the meeting, and they were eventually approved, these two projects, in 3-2 votes. But Kim, one of those Republican commissioners who voted yes, his term is up at the end of June. So come next month, we are going to have a Democratic controlled commission.
Yeah. And just to amplify your point here, when you're looking at these projects, we need to be really clear. Nobody was proposing laying a whole new pipeline down. These were just smaller projects. This is an example. There was one, there's a pipeline that runs from Texas to Michigan by Northern Natural Gas. All it was asking to do was put a new compressor station in Minnesota. And yet, as you note, this exploded at this meeting. The two Democratic commissioners issued dissents. It became this huge thing over what used to be routine business at FERC. And as you note, Neil Chatterjee, who is one of the Republican commissioners, his term ends June 30th. And at that point, Joe Biden is going to have the opportunity to put in a new member, and it'll obviously be a Democrat. Democrats will have the majority. And there's the potential that they just begin shutting down any natural gas updates or maintenance projects, because a lot has to go through FERC in order for it for these companies to just do basic things to their plants. And so we're looking at, you know, not just an oil issue here, but a natural gas issue. And I think one of the things that is worrisome, as Bill has noted, nobody really has a plan for what replaces any of this. You know, you can talk all you want about how, you know, we're going to have more electric vehicles, or we're going to reduce our carbon footprint, but something has to replace it. And there is not the infrastructure at the moment to do that. Look, for instance, at what happened in Texas when they had their cold snap. And it was because they had become too reliant on renewable energy for their grid, and that didn't work out. We're looking at the possibility that begins happening all over the country.
Finally, Bill, your column in the Journal this week is headlined "Stop Blaming Kamala Harris." So what is she getting blamed for, and who is really at fault?
Well, Kyle, she's being blamed for the border crisis. She hasn't visited the border, and that's become the one question, the only question the press is interested in asking: when are you going to the border? And whenever she's asked that question, she said, well, my job is really to talk about root causes, meaning, you know, nothing real. It's kind of an admission it's not going to be solved. And while it's fair game to press her on this, the real problem is Joe Biden's policies. You know, his executive orders, especially the one suspending the Remain in Mexico policy, he created the surge at the border. The president of Guatemala and I believe the president of Mexico have basically said as much. You know, people got the message that the welcome mat is out, just come through the border. And now they're desperately trying to reverse that. So the vice president was saying, my message is don't come. And of course, she was attacked by the left for that. So she's in a bad place. But my argument is there's nothing she can say, given the she can't say the truth, which is, you know, Joe Biden basically created this problem on his own with his virtue signaling executive orders, and he had no policy. You know, she can't say that. So of course she's going to answer badly when she's interviewed.
Yeah, I'll read another section of her comments on her trip to Guatemala last week. Here's what Harris said. The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border. There are legal methods by which migration can and should occur, but we, as one of our priorities, will discourage illegal immigration. And I believe if you come to our border, you will be turned back, unquote. And Kim, some of the criticism is focusing on the difference between her rhetoric in that statement and her campaign rhetoric, you know, when she was running for president or running in California. But I think Bill has a good point here that the press is asking, when are you going to go to the border? And what can she do at the border since Biden has given her kind of this impossible task?
Well, right. Look, we're putting a lot of emphasis here on words when what really matters, as Bill was just saying, is policies and actions. So, you know, she can go down to do this trip and say, don't come. But the reality is that millions of potential asylum seekers understand that that's not what's really happening at the border. You're not necessarily getting turned away. And if there's even a possibility that you may be able to get in, they're going to take it. So it's the policy that needs to change, not the words that you speak in Guatemala. I mean, look, it's good that she said that, but it's not the reality of the situation. And just as, you know, in terms of her comments, as Bill noted, doesn't matter what comes out of her mouth. Again, it's the policy that's the problem. And the Biden administration and Joe Biden himself are behind that. And so putting all this focus on her, look, it wasn't a great trip and it was a pretty subpar performance. But Bill's point is correct that there's not really any good situation for her at the moment or the person, anyone who has to speak about what is very bad policy.
Yeah. And the other notable thing, Bill, about that trip, and you mentioned this in your column, is while she was there, Guatemala's president did an interview with CBS. And he was talking about how the message from the United States changed when Biden came into office. Here's what he said. The message changed to, we are going to reunite families and we are going to reunite children. The very next day, the coyotes were here organizing groups of children to take them to the United States, unquote. And that was the split screen, was the Guatemala's president saying that as Kamala Harris was saying something else, Bill.
Yeah, he also said that we're not on the same side of the coin with the vice president. It was very clear that he was saying the root cause of the problem we're now seeing, the record numbers going to the border, is Joe Biden. And again, it's not something that Kamala Harris can say, but he was very, very clear about that. And I don't see how they get out of it. And I think, frankly, if you're a sane vice president, the last thing you want to do, so long as these policies are in place, is go to the border, because it's just going to be a giant gotcha moment. You have no good answers, as Kim says, so long as this policy's in place. I will say, though, that the focus on picking on Kamala Harris, because she seems particularly bad at answering questions, and not just on this issue. You know, when she gets a tough question, she tends to laugh nervously and kind of try to get out of it that way. And it's very awkward and very bad. And all that is true. But really, shouldn't people be pressing Joe Biden to go down to the border? I mean, he is the president. He's the one that issued those executive orders. And this focus on Kamala Harris is taking the pressure off him.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.